It's Coin Talk, the official show of Bitcoin's resurgence. I'm Aaron Lammer. I'll be joined shortly by Jay Kang. Great show for you today. We talked about two of the best anonymity privacy projects out there, the coins Monero and Zcash. We talked about what they are, how they're different from Bitcoin, how they're different from each other, the role their projects play in the larger crypto world. If you are in it for the basics or you've been around for a while, I think in either case, you will find something new in this discussion. We are brought to you in partnership with Medium. You can find all of the best articles on crypto at me.dm/crypto. That's Medium's crypto landing page. I really recommend you check it out. And if you're really liking it, hey, consider becoming a Medium member. It's $5 a month or $50 a year. Okay, here's the show.
This episode was taped Thursday, February 15th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $10,085.
Coin Talk, back in your ear again.
Yeah, what's up, Aaron?
This is our first rally show.
Yeah,
we got the rally
actually,
hat
this
on.
Is the first one.
We're rallying in real time right now.
Yeah, I mean, because when Bitcoin hit 10,000 for the first time,
yeah,
that was one of our basement.
That was a basement
tapes,
taste
right?
episode, and we were like, "This is crazy." That was yeah. like that was literally like what, like 2.5 months ago or something.
I think it was sometime in December.
Yeah, we were like, we're always going to remember where we were when Bitcoin hit 10,000.
Yeah, and here we are in the same exact seats.
Will you remember where you were when Bitcoin hit 10,000 the second time?
I really hope not.
The rally is pretty nascent, so I feel like I don't have that much to say about the rally. Do you?
No.
Well, you were just telling me that you thought it was going to go back down again, but...
Well, I didn't. I thought that perhaps this might be one of the... You know how in the market cycle chart, like the classic chart of what a market cycle looks like, that there's always this little like tiny spike back up before it goes
yes.
back? Yes. Yeah.
Is that what's referred to as a bull trap?
Yeah. Well, I think bull trap is slightly different, but okay. I think it's sort of like a, you know, like a false optimism.
I'd like to think about myself as the kind of person who learns financial terms and then misuses them.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's how I am about most terms
yeah.
in general.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole new language of the internet, I think. It's using highly technical terms or sort of pseudo-intellectual terms and then misusing them.
It's like how I've probably heard people talk about like a nickel formation in football 10,000 times. Still no idea what that means.
It means you have an extra defensive back, which is called the nickel back.
Thank you.
Yeah, you have five. No, you have five defensive backs, and the fifth one is called the nickel back because five is a nickel.
Got it.
Okay. I know that from Madden.
Okay.
yeah, or like you know how people are using now the phrase postmodernism in insane ways. So like we do that with Bitcoin. We say this is a bull trap.
right.
This is okay. capitulation moment.
So you're saying it could go down. And honestly, I didn't have any idea where Bitcoin was going at 7,500, and I don't have any idea where it's going now. But I will say we were discussing whether it was better for this show if Bitcoin went up or down. And I feel like it's pretty fun doing the show when Bitcoin's going up.
We'll see.
I'm jazzed.
Let's try to get a little bit more, but I do think the fact that we are doing this show is evidence that we're excited about Bitcoin again, which
absolutely.
I definitely am. Not that I wasn't excited about before, but, you know, it does kind of hurt a little bit when there's this sort of looming disaster at the back of your mind all the time.
I will say, having gone down below 10,000, that in the winter, the crypto winter, which we don't know if it's over or not, I did start thinking a lot less about shit coins and a lot more about sort of like fundamentals and like what could really survive an extended freeze, which brings us to what I think the theme of today's show is going to be, which is we want to talk about privacy coins.
Yeah.
We started talking about them a little bit at the end of the last episode when we had Adrian Chen on. Check that out if you haven't yet checked it out. But I think we're going to try and do like a deep dive into the two biggest privacy coins if we have time.
Yeah, so I think that this is part of our mission when we started the podcast, which was to ask two guys who are relatively new to Bitcoin,
yes.
but who do have some background in explaining things, I guess.
Let's just say we have no real background in anything other than, like, I think we're both known as people who would waste way too much time on a hobby.
Yes. Okay. So as obsessives,
yeah,
that we would want to bring some of the stuff that we know to the audience who might not know these things.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yeah, I think that we're going to play a little bit of a game today, right?
Look, like, I've been a fan of Monero, and we've definitely talked a lot about Monero and Zcash. They were amongst the first coins that we got into. But I think what we're going to do is maybe I'll explain Monero a bit to you. You can explain Zcash a bit to me. I was surprised when I actually started doing like a tiny bit of research about how little I actually knew. You can feel like you know about a coin because you've had it in your like block folio for like 2 months, but I hadn't even done really much of the basic research.
Okay, so you are going to explain Monero to me.
Yes,
right?
And you in turn get an opportunity to explain Zcash to me.
Okay, so let me start by telling you what I know about Monero, which
sure.
is very little.
Yeah.
I know that it is a privacy coin. I know that it has the best reputation of all the privacy coins. I know that it seems to be right now completely untraceable and that it has a large application on dark web or dark markets, so people tend to use it.
Dark wing duck.
people actually do use it, yeah. Which is very rare for a cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I think if we did like a leaderboard of real-time transactions, I don't know if this exists or not, Monero would definitely be in the top five, I think, in terms of there's actually money flowing somewhere that's not exchanges for this token.
And I think that given that it's used, I can safely assume that it's generally used for things that are not legal.
Now, that's something I think we'll want to get into.
Okay. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah,
so
right
what
on.
Do I what do I not know?
All right, well, let's start off. We haven't really done news yet, but I'm going to throw you two news items that both have Monero nested within them, like a Russian doll.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those can maybe serve as an introduction to some of the stuff that's happening and is unique about Monero. So the first thing, I don't know if you caught this, that Salon.com.
Oh, wow.
Noted classic internet journalism site. That fair description?
Yes. Neoliberal.
Neoliberal journalism
site.
So you know those like pop-ups when you go to a site and you have an ad blocker on, it'll do a pop-up that's like, hey, you need to turn that off.
GQ being like, can you whitelist us?
Yes.
And generally I say, I'm just not going to read
Yes.
this.
So when you go right now to Salon with an ad blocker on, this pops up and it says, you can either turn your ad blocker off or we're going to use a bit of your unused browser power to mine cryptocurrencies. There is no funnier publisher that could do this than Salon.com.
Oh my God. Wait, so okay.
This is being widely reported that it's mining Bitcoin. It doesn't actually say what it's mining, but I think we both know it's probably not actually mining Bitcoin because that wouldn't work.
Yeah, they must be mining Monero because it's passive. I mean, look, last week we talked to Adrian about Bailblock, which is a project put on by the New Inquiry where they are asking people to passively mine Monero to try and raise cash bail for people in the Bronx.
Yes.
And so these ideas of how to use cryptocurrency mining passively and use a lot of people's different computers to raise money is certainly one that seems to be catching on. I actually think it's probably better for the crypto space.
Yes.
The only thing that I'll say is that I can't think of, I mean, good Lord, like what, like Salon, what are they doing? Like how would anybody say okay to that?
Well, okay. I could see it having bent a different way. Most of the internet has reacted the way you reacted.
Okay.
So you clearly are in the, You're doing what you would normally do, which is disagree with Salon.com.
Yeah.
I feel like if some like futuristic tech publication did this, you know, like if The Verge did this, people would be like, oh, that's so cool. What, like a great new business plan to like monetize?
No, I don't think I would with The Verge. I think that if a Bitcoin-related sort of insurrectionary or anarchist publication did this, I don't think these exist yet, but you know, I'm sure they do, but like,
yeah.
You know, if like somebody really wanted to,
what if the New Inquiry did it? Like if the new inquiry said that we're going to fund themselves doing it. Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit of a question of scale. If it was a small enough enterprise and you really felt like they could like change their whole fortune by doing this, I don't know, there's something kind of inspiring about it.
For one that's really generally been fed by user contributions like the new inquiry that has politics that make it difficult to market to mainstream advertisers, which is certainly not true of Salon. And so, like, yes, the Salon part of it is the actual problem that
so
I have.
It's not an accident that both Salon and the New Inquiry Project, Bellblock, gravitated towards Monero. But it's not like Monero is designing itself to be used by nonprofits. Like, that couldn't be further from the truth. So when we unpack why this has happened, it all goes back to the Kryptonite proof of work hash algorithm, which is the algorithm that you can use to mine Monero. It comes originally from the CryptoNote protocol. I'm just saying words at this point.
Yeah,
but
I'm not.
What's really different about it than what we're used to in mining, which is like, I'm picturing like a giant Chinese factory with just rows and rows of graphics chips. It says, and this is a quote, resistant to application-specific integrated circuit mining.
So ASICs.
So basically, ASIC, which is just a super optimized chip that has very few applications other than Bitcoin mining and 3D graphics, basically excludes anyone who doesn't have that. And this, by resisting that, not actually saying this is better to mine on simpler, potentially older computers, it's just saying we're not going to give an edge to any of these ASIC type chips.
Okay, so remind me why that's important.
Well, people have said that mining for Monero and other currencies that use this Kryptonite protocol, Kryptonite proof of work hash algorithm, rather, is more democratic because average people with normal computers, even extra processing power in the browser can be used to mine it. Whereas the bulk of the Bitcoin mining in the world is done by professional miners, professional equipment, which creates a very different incentive for the miners and more or less excludes the users from becoming miners unless they want to make a significant investment.
So it's like one of these leagues of basketball where nobody can be over 6 feet tall.
Yes, exactly. Or, that's a really good example, actually. I'm not going to throw one out because it'll be worse than that. So I don't know why the original makers of Monero made this decision. It may have been just to not compete with big mining operations, but it's had all of these potentially unexpected effects. Now, another thing I didn't know, I had always heard that Monero was a fork of Bitcoin. And I didn't really are you familiar with Bitcoin? You ever had any Bitcoin in your bag?
No, but I think I had read about it a little bit, but go ahead.
So as best I can understand it, Bitcoin was something of like a, not academic, but almost like a Skunk Works project by a single person. And by the time Bitcoin got out, people were really impressed. They're like, this is a very mature project. It seems like someone's been working on the code base for years. The person behind it was anonymous. 80% of the coins had already been mined. So people sort of looked at Bitcoin and said, this is a really good project. We could really go somewhere. There's a lot of interesting, novel ideas in it. But it's never going to take off if 80% of the coins are already mined. So they hard forked it into a product called Bitmonero. And then 5 days later, there was some sort of a feud, and the Bitmonero team split off from the Monero team with yet another hard fork, which became what is known as Monero today.
It's like the Facebook.
Yeah, except there's like one extra backstabbing in the middle. And one thing I didn't know was that it wasn't actually until like the next month after that that Ricardo Spagni, I don't know how you say his name, who's kind of credited as the founder, or at least the visionary behind Monero, joined the project. So it's not like this is actually like a unique project from Ricardo Spagni. It's something that he picked up on really early and became the leader of. That was something I didn't know.
I have a question for you then.
Shoot. Right?
Monero is important because it's an anonymous coin, right?
That is definitely like the first thing you're
okay,
going to hear
so
about.
Okay, so you and I both own some Monero, right?
Yes. I have at certain times owned quite a bit of Monero.
Yes. So if I go on the exchange in which I have this Monero,
yeah,
I see that I have like X number of Monero,
yeah,
right? How is that anonymous?
Okay, so anonymity, we talked a little bit with Adrian about the ways in which Bitcoin is not anonymous.
Yep.
And I think that that's easy. Like, that's a little hard for people to wrap their head around and practice. But let me give an example. Let's say me and you had a debt, right? And you're like, Aaron, you owe me 0.1 Bitcoin. I was like, that is correct, Jay. We made a bet and I owe you 0.1 Bitcoin. I'll pay you. What's your Bitcoin address? What's your wallet? You give me your address. I send you 0.1 Bitcoin. Now, if that was a Coinbase to Coinbase interaction, you'd be reasonably shielded. But let's say I sent it from my hardware wallet to your hardware wallet.
Sure.
I now know the address of your hardware wallet, and I potentially can go onto the blockchain ledger for Bitcoin and peer into how many Bitcoin you have in that wallet.
Yes.
Forever. I will forever know. It's like you gave me your phone number, and I'm just allowed to like read your phone forever.
Yep.
So the ways in which Monero differs from that, first of all, every coin is fungible, which means each coin is completely interchangeable with every other coin. With something like Bitcoin, let's say there was a massive theft of Bitcoin, 1 million Bitcoin were somehow stolen from an exchange. You could actually like wall those off and say, those are stolen Bitcoin. They are deactivated or blacklisted forever. Monero doesn't have that quality. Monero, each coin is the same as any other coin, which means that the path a coin takes can't be used to trace the people in their wallets who've interacted with that coin.
Okay, so fungibility seems like I understand that concept because yes. Just like cash is fungible, like the anonymity and untraceability seems very, very sort of predicated on fungibility.
Sure.
Because you need to be able to move it without giving away information. And so like a unit can't have like tracers on it.
You can't put a unique ID that's on like the $20 bill, because then all you have to know is where that unique ID has been seen, and you'll know who's had it and how much they've had of it, et cetera. So the secondary level at which it's confidential is called ring signatures. And ring signatures, I think a lot of the things that are going to be true of Zcash and Monero, I think are going to have, there's going to be a lot of similarities. This is a big difference between them. So basically when you do a send with Monero, the address you're sending it to gets mixed in with a bunch of other addresses, and no one will ever know which one of those addresses actually received the transaction.
So there's a big mixer.
Yeah, it's a big mixer. But beyond even there being a big mixer, the very nature of wallet addresses in Monero are called stealth addresses. So they're like sort of like when you have a URL and you shorten it with it, just the shortened Twitter address. That's just a random address that Twitter did. You don't actually know what the full address is unless you have the decoder. So you never actually see a Monero address. You see a weird jump link to a Monero address, which means that no one is ever aware of who they've done business with. Both sides are blind forever. And they actually added an even deeper level, which are called ring confidential transactions, which in addition to obscuring where it's going, obscures the amount. So if me and you did a giant transaction, you can never be like, okay, it was in February 2018. Let's look on the Monero blockchain. Who did a giant transaction on this day at this time and figure it out? Every single piece of it is obscured.
Okay, so then the basic question then, how do I send you Monero then? Because I know how to send you Monero through an exchange. But if I wanted to send you Monero because I wanted to buy a fake passport from you, clearly we probably wouldn't do that through an exchange because it can probably be traced on an exchange. How do I send
you
Monero?
I actually did this because...
because you need to get out of the country.
Wow. I did a portion of that. So I sent my Monero from the exchange to a web wallet called My Monero Wallet, which is made by the makers of Monero. It's also developed by Ricardo Spagni, which ironically, actually, like I had a problem with it and sent a support request, and I just got a email back from Ricardo Spagni, which gave me good faith in the project that like...
Really?
There's like not...
I don't know.
Not
why would,
that,
why would that give you good faith in the project, though? I would feel differently. It's kind of like, you know how in movies where like there's like a child who's trying to start his own business, and then he like picks up the phone and pretends to be the secretary? Like Ricardo Spagni can't even do that. He's like, well, I actually don't have a secretary, and no, I will not
message. It was a mixed message. But at least it's like, you know, he's really involved.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the other just unique parts of it is that he's in South Africa, which also is just an interesting and unusual place to be developing something like this. I don't know what led him on this path. I think he also works for like a crypto payments company or started one. But basically what happens is, and this is even true if you're making a transaction with yourself, if you're sending it from one of your wallets to another, you make a command in the wallet that's receive Monero, and then that generates an address. You send that address to someone else. They do a send to that address. That address is like a one-time cipher that is basically then destroyed.
Okay, so it is the same mechanism as sending Bitcoin.
Yes, except in Bitcoin, you're sending your wallet address.
Yeah.
This time, you're generating like a one-time code.
No, but there's like a one-to-one. Like,
yeah,
hey,
there's a one-to-one.
Okay.
There's a one-to-one, but it's a moving target. Basically, nothing ever gets used again. So moving on to what I think Monero is better known for, there was a big darknet market bust in the last week or two for not actually AlphaBay, but Infraud. This is not the one we were talking about with Adrian, which was AlphaBay, which was a predecessor, though a successor to Silk Road. Infraud was run by a Russian guy named Sergey Medvedev, and he was caught in Thailand. Seems like if you run a darknet market, you got to live in Thailand.
Yeah, but you also get caught in Thailand.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe Thailand is not as secure for darknet markets as people seem to think. Since it seems like this guy was, it's not even like he lived in Thailand, right? He was like on vacation in Thailand.
I think he had fled to Thailand. I think he had fled from Russia to Thailand. Infraud, I think, was less of a drug marketplace and more
sold,
of
like credit card numbers.
So credit card skimmers, credit card numbers. It was basically like a lot of like tools for crime and the proceeds of crime moving hands. So this was surprising to me. And I think maybe to you too. He was caught with 100,000 Bitcoin.
That blew my mind.
That's a lot of Bitcoin.
So much Bitcoin. I mean, that is what, like, I mean, even within, like, if you just think of it as the hypothetical limit of Bitcoin, I mean, 100,000 of 20 into 21 million is a large percentage of, like, all the Bitcoin.
I think there's only, like, 14 or 15 million. So once we've burnt all the coins.
It's like 1/140th.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about someone who may have controlled a half of 1% to even 1% of the world's liquid Bitcoin. And this is a guy who's running a single dark market site. So one of the things that I learned about Monero and the way it's used criminally is I think most people think that Monero is used for the transaction to buy this stuff, sell this stuff. It's also used as a way to hide Bitcoin proceeds. So a lot of the payouts on these like extortion online kind of frauds is actually in Bitcoin. And then people will use Shapeshift and Changely to exchange that Bitcoin for Monero, which is then untraceable.
So Shapeshift being like another mixer.
More or less, yeah. Like, so Shapeshift and Changely are places where if you don't want to go in an exchange, you can basically just send them one currency. They send you back another currency at more or less market rate. You probably don't get quite as good a rate as you would in exchange, but it's basically like going to a money changer at the airport rather than going sort of a larger currency exchange. So I'm surprised he has 100,000 Bitcoin. In the case of Alexander Cazares, who was the guy who ran AlphaBay, when he was caught, they assumed that the bulk of his wealth was in Monero, but that they would never be able to figure out how much there was. And I guess this could be true here. This guy may have a dead Monero wallet with even more than 100,000 Bitcoin worth of Monero.
Yeah, well, that was what caught my eye about this story was that, 100,000 Bitcoin is insane. He could have, like, bought an NBA team a few years ago.
I mean, do we know what percentage of the Bitcoin and these other currencies in the world are held basically in, like, criminal systems like
That's
fraud.
Something that the CFTC is definitely looking into right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that always is the real question that people have, right? Which is just like, where is all this stuff?
Yes.
And who is using it? And the people who are dismissive, like Nouriel Roubini or any other sort of hellbent critics of Bitcoin, they will tell you that it's all fraud, you know? And then people are like, it's not all fraud. There are people who are making remittance payments across. But then you hear a story like this and you're like, okay, look, clearly some people are using this for fraud and illegal activities.
See, I feel like those issues get confused with each other. So there's like fraud, like the way ICOs are often fraudulent.
No.
Inter-crypto scams. And then there's true external to crypto criminal activity that is using crypto coins as its primary money. And I think we hear a lot about frauds within crypto, but literally this mafia, like controlled by literal international criminal masterminds, we don't really know. When people talk about that, is that a few percent of the Bitcoin out there, or is that like more than 50%? It might be like these guys might have most of the Bitcoin by this point.
They really might.
People who are really early have a lot of Bitcoin. Roger Ver had 300,000 Bitcoin.
The pie chart would be incredible to look at. I think it would be like, well, here's Satoshi, you know,
yeah,
and then here's the guy who did id fraud, and then here's how much every other dark net market is. And then here's Roger Ver, and then here is everybody else, and it's like a tiny sliver. It could be. I mean, at this point, we don't really know those sorts of volume things, even though I'm sure that some sort of audit could be done, given the transparency of the blockchain. But yeah, it's the 100,000 number just blew me away.
Yeah, it's a fascinating angle that I feel like is underreported because people want to report so much within crypto, but this stuff may dwarf all of these like exchange hacks in its scale.
It's $1 billion, right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Like if Bitcoin is $10,000,
yes,
it's $1 billion.
Yeah, it just passed $1 billion.
He had $1 billion in Bitcoin.
Well, at one point, hey, if he was hodling through the rise, at one point he had like $1.8 billion.
Yeah, I know.
And then he went to jail.
Yeah, and then he went to jail. So wait, I have a question then about that. What happens to that 100,000 Bitcoin?
I believe that now governments are just auctioning them off. And Romania, so at one point, Romania, as people who are interested in fraud and scams, which I am, I find the stories of fraud and scams irresistible. There's so many fraud scammers in Romania, and they had caught so many, that the government had been seizing Bitcoin and didn't really know what to do with it. They had basically been doing it over time, because again, who was early to Bitcoin? Fraudsters and scammers.
Yep.
When they finally tabulated how much Bitcoin they had and discussed bringing it to market, and they, I think, are doing an auction, because that's the only way you can sell these huge chunks is basically in an auction. It was 1/4 of their national debt. They have enough Bitcoin to pay off 1/4 of their national debt.
God. Yeah. Well, look, civil forfeiture is obviously a big problem here in this country, and I do wonder if going to be some enterprising attorney general or, you know, law enforcement people who are going to start targeting crypto people.
So, I mean,
because you could just seize it.
That's a really fascinating difference between Bitcoin and Monero. So Bitcoin, you can get involved in some criminal shit with Bitcoin, it gets seized by the government, and then it gets pushed right back into the market. Monero, if you're a dead wallet with Monero and you just let it die, it's absolutely unseizable. No one can ever get that Monero without the private keys. Which means that when guys like Medvedev and Alexander Kazaris, these dark market guys who may have had more than 100,000 Bitcoin worth of Monero, that Monero is burnt forever. And there's only 21 million Monero coins, just like there's 21 million Bitcoins, which I just think is a very smart and reasonable thing to do. Like if there's already like a peg that people understand, just make it the same number of coins. But Monero may be dying out, you know, the coins may be getting burnt forever faster than Bitcoin even.
That's true. Okay, so I have a question then.
Yeah.
Let's say that, you know, Ricardo Spagni and the Monero people, right?
Sure.
Like, if you ask them in an interview, does your thing exist to abet criminal activity? Of course, they'll say no, right?
Yep.
You are very bullish on Monero. You have been for, like, months, and you talk about, you buy Monero derivatives like Sumo Coin.
How dare you? They're equal citizens.
Are you like
a sumo lord is every bit the equal of Monero lord.
Are you doing this because you think that the real test case for, or the real use of cryptocurrencies is criminal behavior and criminal activity, and that if you are going to put your eggs in a basket, you should put it in the criminal behavior, criminal activity basket?
I feel like that question was entrapment.
You sound like one of these Jordan Peterson fucking acolytes who have been coming at me on Twitter for 5 days. Really, like, you trapped him. That's an unfair question. No, it's a totally fair question. Like,
I feel there's two major ways I feel about it. And the first one's stronger and is not inherently tied to criminality,
sure,
which is Bitcoin's the leader. If one of these projects is going to be the best investment of all the altcoins, it's going to be the one that has the greatest chance to compete with Bitcoin. And I think the two coins that, to me, honestly can make that claim are Monero and, or let's not just say Monero, privacy coins and Ethereum, because they both present a full vision of the future. And Ethereum is a really different vision than Bitcoin, but there's a different path that could be taken, which is Bitcoin was used on the Silk Road. Like, that's where Bitcoin came from. We had Adrian Chen on, you know, and that's its origin story. So it would make sense to me that whatever is being used on darknet markets now has a chance to be competitive with Bitcoin in the future.
Okay, I don't quite believe your answer, because I think you just wanted to say yes.
That was number two. Is I do think a huge market is money laundering and applications that require privacy. Now, you can say most of those are money laundering. I don't really know. Like, I don't know what all the applications that require privacy. I know that I would prefer, if I was dealing in any volume in almost anything, to have my transactions be private. They seem more valuable. And I also think, like, what do they say? Like, money laundering is worth 30% of the money. If people are moving Monero all over the world, I think that makes it a good investment.
Yeah, look, if they may, I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday, is that if somebody released, I mean, obviously they can't do this, but if they release an ETF that was drawing from every single type of money laundering, whether like $115 million apartments in New York City to cryptocurrencies to, you know, like high-end art.
Yeah.
I would put so much of my money into the
Beijing real estate.
Yeah, like, into the money laundering ETF.
Or Hong Kong, rather. Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting idea. Like, people would say it's unethical to speculate on Monero if you think that it's like a criminal.
Like, I would not say that.
I know you would. I know you wouldn't. I know that you find no form of speculation unethical.
Yeah, exactly.
But some people would say that. But I don't think many people would say that, like, making gains on a Manhattan condo because the market is propped up by like foreign money laundering money is like unethical. I consider
them
similar.
I think a lot of people would say that, but I mean, I think that they have almost no power to stop it.
Yeah.
Because the government, the city government, as well as the US federal government at this point, you know, they're fine with it. I mean,
I just don't hear anyone saying, no, I don't want to move to New York. New York City real estate has like a bunch of ties to like money laundering interests.
Well, sure. But I do think that people would say like we should not support like the turning of the Plaza Hotel into condos that are only bought by Russian oligarchs.
I agree with
like
that. I agree with that.
Okay. What is there anything else about Monero?
One more thing.
Yeah.
Monero means coin in Esperanto.
That's what I thought. I was like, is that an Esperanto word?
No wonder I gravitate toward it. I always love Esperanto words.
Yeah, that's like the closest that you're going to come to like the dark web yourself. Like your love of Esperanto.
Yeah.
All right. So we both had assignments for this, right?
Yeah.
So I am going to tell you about Zcash.
Tell me.
It's hard for me to say, but I think that if you were going to say, what are the two privacy coins with the best reputations, everyone would say Zcash and Monero.
Yeah, and I think that if you were to overall poll people, I think Zcash has a more reputable reputation.
Okay.
And it gets invited to conferences that Monero is, the shady step cousin of.
Yeah, like I think that Zcash is kind of like the Harvard graduate, whereas Monero is a brilliant guy, but, you know, might be at Suffolk State or something like that and doesn't go to class.
Yeah, it's like someone who's like a brilliant cryptographer who has like a few felony convictions from his early 20s on his record.
All right, so the most appealing thing, and I think that the reason why Zcash is invited to conferences and the reason why it gets its foot in a lot of doors is because of the team, right? Now, Zcash, like almost all other crypto projects, is open source. There's no centralized control, but the people who are on the team are very, very impressive in ways that are really easily understandable by your layperson. So the head of it is Zuko Wilcox, who tweets all day and who is very sort of influential in the crypto space. He worked on DigiCash, a bunch of other stuff. They also have people like Matt Green, who is a cryptology expert who works at Johns Hopkins.
Hey, follow him. Good Twitter crypto content.
Yeah, he's great. I've actually interviewed him once.
Oh, you have?
We should
have him on the show.
He's a really smart guy. Christina Garman, who is also at Johns Hopkins. guy named Alessandro Ciesa at UC Berkeley. You know, almost everyone there went to some top university, is either a professor university.
Didn't Snowden tweet, like, if you want real, like, privacy, use academic cryptography?
Yeah,
or
yeah, so, like, ZK Snarks. Yeah, yeah, and he was talking about ZK Snarks. And so if you were to say that there is a, that that this idea, this is something that Jameson Lopp told us, that he looks at the team, right?
Sure.
And can the people, do the people who are making the team, can you sort of infer that they are making a good faith effort at making a real project that is not just a cut and paste job of some other cryptocurrency that they're using to pump and dump, you know, like, is this a real project or not? And with Zcash, I think more than any other cryptocurrency, perhaps even more than Bitcoin, you can sort of say that, you know, like, these people are very smart people. They're people who probably do not care that much about money because they're, you know, they're not scammers.
I mean, whether they care about money or not, if you have a PhD, you clearly at least are, like, in it for the long con.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Exactly, exactly. And they're not, like, going to pump and dump their own coin, sell the top, and then, like, move on to another pump and dump scam. Like, that's not who these people are. And so that, I think, is why it has such a good reputation. It has a bit of an interesting history in that it started as the Zero Coin project, which is still something that you can invest in, but it was supposed to be a way to mix your Bitcoin on the original Bitcoin blockchain.
Sure.
And so it wasn't supposed to be an actual,
which echoes
altcoin.
A bit what we said, what we're talking about with Monero as a place to dump stolen Bitcoin, which is these anonymized coins you can dump into them and then dump back to Bitcoin, and you've more or less obscured the entire path.
Yeah, so Zcash, I think it's interesting because they decided, they got a lot of flack, I think, when they decided to make their own cryptocurrency and not just use Zcoin, which was, like, you know, something that was supposed to be used on the Bitcoin blockchain, because they reserved, like a lot of these ICOs do, they reserved a lot of it for some percentage for the founders, right?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't just like Monero was, it wasn't just this thing that was going to be mined.
Yep.
And that it was completely open and democratic. And so people from the beginning were sort of out against Zuko and some of the other people because they were saying, like, look, you've reserved way too much for yourself. Their retort to that is essentially what other people say and what, you know, is true in, like, the pharmaceutical business, for example, which is that, like, we have to have a way to pay for all these people's time. These aren't, like, you know, charlatans who are running around. They're PhDs. They're people with a lot of expertise. And we need a way for our initial investors and them to be...
And the startup world, this is not like foreign to the startup world, and people have figured out ways to incentivize people to work in the long term through, like, vesting schedules. It's not like you could take the 20% share and just take it straight to Maui, which you could on some of these ICOs.
Sure. But, you know, I think to be fair to the people who are critical of it, if you are talking about something that is totally anonymous, that is democratic,
I see where you're going with this.
Like, you know, this certainly
where
is.
Where did
a
they go?
This certainly is something that will give you pause. It's not sort of it doesn't have the anarchic promise that Bitcoin had at the very beginning, and I think that's why people are upset about it. So, it also is a completely anonymous transaction, sort of, right? And this is part of the reason why
people have poked a few holes in their anonymity. And there's a lot of, like, if you look at, like, Ricardo Spagni, who runs Monero, and Zuko, who runs Zcash, there's a lot of sniping back and forth.
Yeah, they don't like each other.
Who's got the better anonymity plan?
It's like Katy Perry and Taylor Swift or something like that. Everything they tweet is kind of about the other person.
You're definitely the first person who made that comparison.
All right, so let me tell you how it works, which, you know, once again, we are going to very strongly say that neither Aaron or I are experts in this, so if we get anything wrong, then please tell
us.
You
can just generally assume this show is neither financial advice nor software development advice.
Nor factual. All right, so it also uses sort of a mixer idea, right? So you are sending a coin from one person to another person, and it goes through this elaborate process, and on the other end, it goes from me to you, but nobody can see what happened in the middle, right?
Yeah.
And that is not true of Bitcoin because you have confirmations that are on the blockchain that are public. You can see where the Bitcoin went. It's not true of Zcash, right? So the thing that is used is this thing called ZK Snark, which stands for Zero Knowledge Succinct Non-Interactive Argument of Knowledge.
It's a great name for, like, an indie rock band also.
Yeah, it also sounds vaguely authoritarian and out of George Orwell.
I never noticed this before, but Zuko is ZK. Is he named after that? Did he name? Did he change his name to be like that?
I don't think so.
Or did
so.
He name
I think
it after himself?
His name is Zuko. But I think ZK Snark, Zero Knowledge. I have no idea. It might be that he was like one night high and pondering the letters of his name. And yeah. He's like, ZK also could stand for Zero Knowledge.
Aaron Lammer, Absolute Logic.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see, to watch you slowly get red-pilled on this show, Aaron.
Yeah.
Absolute Logic
Lammer. The red pill, basically in the red pill, blue pill example, I just eat both pills and see what happens.
All right, so these Z snarks or ZK snarks are how these transactions are done. They're sort of a yep. layer on top of it. And
so
it's very, very complicated, and it's based on sort of algebraic math. But the essential thing that you just need to know is that what you're doing is that one side is positing something that they know, right?
Yep.
About the other side, right?
Yes.
Neither side knows what that thing is.
It's like if you were going to like have like a secret meetup like with like a spy contact, and it's like, okay, we're both going to say like partridge.
That is true, but you don't even know that the word is partridge.
Right. We don't know what the word is of the other person, but we're going to they're going to form like a key that matches, links into each other.
Intermediary will hear from both of you that you said partridge.
Yes.
But neither of you will know that partridge is the word.
We'll both say like half a sentence in a language that we don't know, but someone who knows that language will say, are those two halves of a sentence make one full sentence?
Okay, yeah, validate. Exactly. Or like, or they'll give you a document with 500 words. You have no idea what that word is, and they'll give someone else a document with 500 words.
Yes.
And that they'll have no idea what the word is. But if the word is said by both,
yes.
then the transaction goes through. But nobody knows anything about it, right? So
yes.
That actually is sort of the general idea of it, I think.
So those ZK snarks, just to recap and tell me if I'm wrong, ZK snarks are to Zcash what ring signatures are to Monero. These are like they're defining, like there's a bunch of similarities. They're both fungible. The defining difference between them is how they approach that anonymity and how they make that secret one-time linkage.
Yes. And so here's some problems with Zcash, and I think this is part of the reason why I think they're both beloved within the crypto community, because the people who are doing it are very smart and reputable. They make crypto look good, but also why people have a lot of skepticism towards it, which is that you don't have to use the ZK snarks transaction. That if you do, it's called a shielded transaction,
and that's true in Monero also.
Yeah.
The shielding is the anonymity is opt in or opt out. You can't just send. I can just give you my real address. I just can also choose to give you a phony address, basically.
So Zcash coins are either in a transparent pool or a shielded pool, essentially, right? Like so.
Yeah.
It's either that the blinds are up or the blinds are down.
Yeah.
As of December of 2017. According to something I read, only around 4% of Zcash coins were in the shielded pool. And so that means, you know, the vast, vast majority are just out there and, you know, you can find them. Like you and I have both owned Zcash, right? I mean, what we owned were unshielded coins. It's the same as owning Bitcoin in the sense that they're traceable.
It's almost a little bit like, oh yeah, we all could anonymize our web traffic with VPNs. But realistically, most people just won't use the VPN.
Yeah.
And like these coins are just traffic. I mean, even though that's their intended use and what makes them unique, most people still, like, if I was just sending you Monero, why do I need to show
that?
So
I think that's the thing. Like if most of it is just done for store of value and it's not done to actually make an anonymous transaction, then there's no reason to go through the shielded transaction. So like, for example, if you told me, hey, do you want to buy some of my Zcash? And I was like, sure. And I like brought some cash to you.
Yeah.
And you just sent it to me through the exchange or through any sort of transfer system, then we wouldn't bother shielding it, like, because who cares?
No.
You know?
But even if you don't shield the transaction, in both the case of Zcash and Monero, you can't peer into the wallet. So just even though I know your phone number now, it doesn't mean I can just read everything you've ever done.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is still a difference. Like it's more shielded just by its general nature, even if you do it with your hands up.
So like the math behind all of this and comparing ring signatures to ZK snarks, I think, is well beyond our comprehension. I tried to read it, and it was like my eyes
I will say one other thing that I didn't know is I know that Zcash is always considered the academic coin, but Monero is actually like the whole idea of ring signatures is from a 2001 MIT paper.
Sure.
So all of this stuff originally came from academic cryptography.
Yeah. And so I think that the sort of case for Zcash is not current, because the fact that 96% of the coins are not shielded means that no one's using it. You know, it means that I've not yet to see a drug baron or a credit card fraudster getting caught with a ton of Zcash.
And I'll say that for me, for Monero, I wasn't totally clear when I made that how I was supposed to shield or not shield my transaction.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not easy. And also with Zcash, most places don't actually have the shielded wallets, so you have to kind of look for them, which is also difficult. Yep. At that point, you might as well just use any other number of ways of sending money illegally, which including just dumping a suitcase full of cash somewhere. But I think the reason why people are excited about it is because it launched to such fanfare, and because of the strength of the team, they believe that if these people, smart people, all work together, that they'll come up with something good. So the use case is down the line.
Yeah.
You know, but the price is always pretty high. And so I don't know. I think that Monero is definitely being used a little bit more than Zcash, but I think that Zcash is in that way a little bit more speculative of a bet at this point, saying that at some point it will be the king privacy coin because the people working on it are very smart. I mean, is that influential to your thinking at all?
It is. I mean, look, the thing I believe in the most in cryptocurrency is store of value. That is the use case I truly believe in. There's other use cases like Ethereum Pony Universe that I'm like, that's fun to talk about, maybe. But I really believe like right now, right here, in store of value use cases for cryptocurrencies. And I think privacy coins have the best case to make for store of value. I think there's a bunch of evidence for it. A really big difference, I was mistaken about this. I actually thought that Zcash had a smaller total supply than Monero, and that's not true. They're both 21 million coins, which makes me think they both have integrity. But there's currently 15 million Monero out there, whereas Zcash has a very slow trickle. There's only 3.2 million Zcash currently on the market. Yeah. So
it's a very slow release.
Yeah, and that makes for at least present day store of value kind of usage. It's trading for a little under $500. You could see it going really high. There's not very many of them, you know? And they're both mineable more or less by if you go on Craigslist and you look at the mining rigs for sale, people always say Zcash miner, Monero miner. The whole system's up and running the way it is with Bitcoin.
Yeah, I agree. But I am worried about the fact that at some point you're going to have a sort of first in advantage, right? And I do think that the fact that people are not using Zcash but are using Monero, that does concern me. If both work, and one is theoretically and scientifically and technologically superior to the other, but they both work, I don't quite see why there would be a massive shift if one of them already has a huge first mover advantage over the other.
I don't know how much of the first mover advantage it has. I agree with you. It does anecdotally seem like a lot more. But what's interesting to me about store of value privacy type coins is the forks and clones have been really popular of them. Z Classic was trading for high close price. And normally when people are like, oh, it's a fork, it's Bitcoin Platinum, I'm like, well, who cares? It's Bitcoin Platinum is not going to survive or endure. But if there's actually a real practical use case, something like Monero, and you're actually using it to do a hidden transaction for a criminal act or whatever you want to do that hidden transaction, then in some ways a Monero clone is just as good as real Monero. Sumo Coin, which I've shilled hard on the show, is a Monero clone. There's a ton of ZK Snarks coins out there that are basically doing variants on what Zcash is doing. I don't even, you've had a few of them, haven't you? You've dabbled in those realms.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, during my short Cryptopia days before I was kicked off the
Z Classic, what is it? Zero Coin.
Yeah, well, Zero Coin is a little bit... Zero Coin is the original Zcash.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Isn't there another one that's also a fork that's all... They've all got Zs.
Zoin.
Anything that... Oh, Zoin. Yeah. Oh, I was accusing you of the acts that I had committed.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you talking? I think you're talking about yourself.
Seem to remember a Z coin from Cryptopia. Well, how do you feel about investing them in the long term? Why are you holding them?
In
either Monero or Zcash.
I mean, I'm not.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
But I was for a very long period of time. And it's for reasons similar to you that I could see that they would be used in money laundering, and I think money laundering is a sort of stable business, right?
Yeah.
And that that if there things are actually being used, then that's kind of interesting to me as well, because, you know, 97% of coins are never used, right? So the reason why I think I got out, well, look, there's a lot of market reasons that are less interesting, you know, based on just the fact that it's easier just to have Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Especially during these times when it just seems like a safer bet.
It's true if you're gambling on stable coins, like, you're not gambling on quick profits either way.
Yeah. I do think that the thing that I would say is that until there is economies that are not all darknet markets where these things need to be used.
Yeah.
Right. I have a hard time believing that they are going to expand beyond that. So, like, a lot of Zuko's job, it seems like, you know, or the Zcash group's job is to go around to regulators, go around to law enforcement, go around to politicians, and convince them that this whole project is not just done to fund illegal markets, right? And so they are basically going around and saying, like, look, it's good for things to be fungible, it's good for things to be anonymized, there are a lot of other applications for that. But then when you read what they're actually saying, like, there's no, like, solid examples.
All right, I'm going to push back slightly on that idea. I think that's kind of a, like, guilty until proven innocent kind of view of them. We don't really
these things are being used for...
But we don't know what percent, like, we don't know. I mean, that's, like, the nature of the coins.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that. I don't think that, and I don't think that they're making these things to, I don't think that, like, Zuko and Matt Green are sitting around being like, how can we help fund the illegal passport business?
No.
But I do think that there needs to be at least, or at least I just want to hear one reason why you would use this instead of cash, or why you would use this instead of Bitcoin, you know, if it's not to just make an illegal transaction. That's
okay.
It.
The reason why I continue to be bullish about them and continue to think that they're much more than that is that I don't think that just because you desire privacy, you're inherently doing something bad. I think that, like, that desire to a right of privacy, which is, like, very central to the Bitcoinian worldview.
Bitcoinian.
like if the world that people are describing with Bitcoin comes true, I think people are going to want privacy. I would want, like... If you could just, like, freely give me privacy on Bitcoin, I would take it. And that makes me think that they have a unique and compelling feature that Bitcoin doesn't have, which I really can't say about 90% of the alts that I've ever had in my bags.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the final question here is if these features do prove useful, whether they're in darknet marketplaces or for average consumers, will we see Bitcoin adding them in through some sort of an additional layer?
That's the other thing I don't quite get, right?
Yeah.
Which is that, like, Zcash started as a way to modify Bitcoin.
Yep.
Right? And I don't...
A middleman.
Kind of get why they need another step to it, you know? Like, why not just convince Bitcoin Core or any of the developers to start adding in privacy?
Well, that's
if all it is is a mixer that you're putting in the middle, essentially, you know, it's possible to add that to Bitcoin. And I think that, you know, one of the people that we look to for smart thoughts on this, Haralabis Vulgaris, he at some point was tweeting about that.
He was like, I
believe in Monero. I believe in privacy coins, but I also believe there will be a day where Bitcoin will just add these things onto it.
I think I agree with him there, but I think Monero will continue to appreciate until that point. Which is to say, what would cause Bitcoin to think that was important would be the rise of currencies like Monero and Zcash.
Yeah, but then you're basically betting on, you know, like, it's like if somebody doesn't have proprietary rights over, like, a technology and the other people are just too lazy to just do it themselves, like, you're kind of betting on that, you know?
It's also, like, a little unclear what that even means that Bitcoin would add it. You know, that could be a fork of Bitcoin. That could be like a Lightning network style, like second layer solution. I think that's what most people are thinking when
that there will be like a button that you can press to be like, which is make kind this of, one private.
Which is kind of how Zcash and Monero work already. It would just be not part of the initial code base. It would be like part of something that was built as a on top of it. I can see a bunch of different outcomes. If the outcome is like, oh, it's dumb to invest in Monero because like Bitcoin is going to like make itself Monero, I'm like, that sounds like a very good bet to me. Something that's that vital seems like a good bet.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, so have we talked you into buying any Zcash or Monero, or are you staying out of the game?
I'm staying out.
Okay.
I basically have not touched any of the alternate exchanges in a month or two.
I feel like it's a little premature now because we're in a spike. But next time, let's check in on our bags, the resuscitation.
I still have Storm because I'm too lazy to sell
it. Well, we'll be checking back in on that. And if you have questions about Monero or Zcash or any of these privacy coins that I can't remember the name of, send them to our mailbag, hi@cointalk.show. Maybe we should just start reading a few mailbag questions in every show, right?
Sure, we have a few. Yeah.
Okay. There's none in this episode, but we'll be starting to answer some mail. So if you have questions about stuff we've talked about, that's great, because then we could talk about it again.
Great.
All right. See you soon, Jay.
This episode was taped Thursday, February 15 at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $10,085.
And with that comes the end of another Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. I co-hosted and edited this show. My co-host is Jay Kang. That baby crying in the background needs some diapers, so buy some Sumo Coin. We are brought to you in partnership with Medium. You can find all of our episodes at medium.com/cointalk, or you can just search in any podcast app for Coin Talk. Hey, maybe give us a rating on iTunes. That would be amazing. If you'd like to send us mailbag questions or perhaps even sponsor the show, it's hi@cointalk.show. We have at least an episode to you every week and hopefully more. We should be back very soon. So keep tuned. Tell your friends. Tell us what's in your bag. Maybe on Twitter @CoinTalkShow, or perhaps on Instagram @CoinTalkShow. Say hi. We love to hear from people listening. See you next week.